Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Researchers and families agree we simply don't know enough about autism. The SPARK study is the largest genetic study of autism ever. Dr. Suma Jacob is director of the Autism Research Program at the University of Minnesota, and she joins us today on the phone with an update on the study and how it's impacting families in South Dakota. Dr. Jacob, welcome back to In the Moment.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you've been with us more than once, but for folks who haven't heard those previous conversations, let's start with a little background on what the SPARK study is.
Yes, the SPARK study is the largest study that's ever been attempted by joining families across the country who are affected by autism. And the reason we need large numbers of families are that there are many different things that contribute to causing autism. And if we could get critical numbers together, we can start working out clues and things like genetic things that add to risk for developing autism. And so this has been a very exciting study. We started it almost, 3 to 4 years ago. We're in our fourth year now. And regionally, with the regional site around Minnesota, we have thousands of families who've signed up, but over 700 families have completed submitting the information for DNA, and we are in the process of beginning to send back results and connecting families to others who have findings, which is one of the most incredible resources that the study will offer in the long term.
Tell us a little bit about Nationwide, the different partners. There's so many clinical partners involved in this program, too. Let's give people an idea of the scope of this project.
Yeah. So it's very, very exciting. I just came back from our national meeting where we have around 27 sites now. We started around 21 sites. We all got together and for a couple days and talked about where the study is as a whole in the nation. One of the nice things about the clinical sites is that it's available for families if you're affiliated with a clinical site, and the Minnesota site is the closest to the South Dakota. And I have friends and family in the South Dakota area, so I visited, and they often come back and forth for travel and other reasons. So we're regionally, not a super short drive, but a drive away, and easily a phone call away. And we, as a site, can guide families in any of the processes of signing up online, or if the data collection is done via SPIT, and it can be sent out in the mail. But even then, once the families are waiting to hear back from information where things are in the process and or when they get their results sent back, they have the option of having it sent back to their doctor. There are also resources to connect them to clinical geneticists to explain things. And the nice thing about a site is you have a person to contact and a team to contact if you have any questions or are trying to figure things out based on the information you receive.
All right. Tell us a little bit about what kind of, when you say you're sending back results, we're at that point. What are you talking about? What kind of feedback are the people who participate in the study expecting to get?
Yep. So this is unique in, before I did this study, when we do these large genetic research studies, researchers are very cautious to because we want to be sure, we want to really understand things before giving back information. But a study of this magnitude and where we are with our current knowledge of autism, we've been able to partner in a way with the resources to be families. If one of the 147 regions, which is a lot of regions, we started out, 3 years ago looking at the region, 40 regions. But as each year new regions are added, the families who participate can find out about those new areas. If one of those 147 regions is significant within the family will designate who they want that information to go to, their designated clinician, and then we can help them with the resources to figure out what that means. So let's say that there's one rare gene variant that's identified, the national resources allow us to give information about what that means. Some families, as we're doing more and more research on autism, there are these rare regions that are being found. And so then they're connected with, say, the other 20 or 30 families in the country. Sometimes it's new and early and it's just the beginning. But one of the things Spark offers is there's an affiliated program called Searchlight that's really set up to help families, if something is discovered, to learn as much as we know now and connect to other resources with those rarer findings, what that means. So I'm excited because it's going above and beyond what we've traditionally done in research because it's longitudinal. And as we learn more each year, we add that information, but also how to give information back to families and connect them to the resources of what we know the most right now.
Talk about why that is important in the sense that if you have a child with autism, you know, time really matters. You maybe can't wait in the sense of, you know, 20 years from now or 5 years from now, we'll know more. A lot of water goes under the bridge for a family by that time.
Yeah. So one of the things about knowing early and as soon as you can is there are early interventions, but, you know, autism is a lifelong, you know, journey that families go on. And I think learning at any point, even if you're an adult, gives you a lot of information about things that may be associated with it. As we're beginning to study older individuals, we're finding that there may be other medical conditions or things that are related and learning more how to do preventative work. So I can, one example of a family that I know that did get genetics results about a very, very rare disorder was that allowed them to connect to the other families with that disorder that are spread across the world. And one of the physicians that has a lot of experience with the disorders happens to be in Europe. And the family talked to that physician who said, well, my experience is that individuals do particularly well with a certain kind of medication. And then with that medication, there are some side effects. And knowing that early, that individual could start that medication, but we could do preventative work by how we monitor diet and exercise to prevent some of the side effects. So in some ways, the knowledge and getting it early and connecting allows you to make decisions about what's available now. Maybe 10 to 20 years, we'll know a lot more about that disorder. And there will even be more options that there are now. But just by finding out about what is there, it starts that pathway and starts those connections because a group often knows more than one individual.
And then is there a big picture, too, as far as what you're kind of studying? Tell us a little bit about the long-term potential for this study.
Well, I think it's unique in so many ways. One thing is it's a long-term group. So as we get these new findings year after year, that information is added. And as long as families and individuals want to be a part of it, they can. If they change their mind, they can always withdraw or pull out. But that way, this new information is updated. And then there will be things that are very unique that we'll find that very few people have. But in 5 years from now, there will be more people and more work done on those very unique things. And so you get to be part of that cumulative learning and understanding and also access resources that help you understand what's going on. Because a lot of things that are affected, these aren't simple genetics, their complex interactions with environment and development. And the more you learn about them and the things that you can do from each other, the more options you have. In a way, families are joining this learning process with scientists and clinicians who are going on the journey with them.
So there's no, quote, end to the study necessarily. Hopes are that people will continue to tell me a little bit about that.
Currently the way it's been set up is we did our first 3 years and we're continuing going forward. And one of the nice things that it's, a foundation supported study, and the foundation has a big investment in making this work longer term. So I think that that'll definitely continue in the near future. And as more is organized, I think they'll really think about resources to keep it going as long as they can.
Are you still taking families now, new people who want to participate?
We are very much looking for new families. One of the challenges of being in this upper Midwest area is many families, and it's more remote than some of the big, large cities. So we really, want to offer these resources to families throughout the region. And we try to keep, we probably reached many of the families that are in the bigger cities, and we are definitely looking for building our connections and outreach further on, and definitely we want to make more connections in the South Dakota area, and also think about ways that we can offer resources across the region, because I know that that's often a challenge for families with neurodevelopmental disorders accessing resources.
As a scientist, I'm curious, how much do you follow other research that's happening? Do you have to wait for things to be published in medical journals? Are you connected with other scientists who are studying autism from all sorts of angles?
We're very lucky to be connected. I think we often go to conferences and meet others. A lot of our projects, because they are bigger, we're collaborating and talking to each other. This, as well as some other projects, has allowed me to meet top autism clinicians and researchers across the world, including Canada and Europe. And because of that, I'm so excited about all the learning that's going on in all those different places. And I'm always thinking about how can I bring back that learning and those new discoveries and those new approaches locally. And so in some ways, the exchange of information, because it is a smaller world via technology and how we communicate, is faster, and it's growing in that way.
Is it a I want to say popular, but do you see a lot of, sort of juice in the scientific community to address autism? It's something that a lot of parents are very keyed into. Is the scientific world really keyed into this as an area of research? Because it seems like we know so little.
Yeah, I think this is actually a very interesting question, because being someone who I work with both children and adults, and I recently had a conversation about funding and where our scientific money goes. But often I think that we have to keep working extra hard for autism and for children's disorders, even though early changes can make a big impact long term. Often people who are making funding decisions, the decisions are closer to the life phase that they're in. So historically, there's often a lot of funding for later age life disorders than there are for early childhood disorders. And so even though I'm very excited that autism is getting more well-known and more research and support and funding, I still think in comparison to some of the later adult disorders, there's still a lot more that we can do. And the exciting thing is, if you make changes early on, it really can shift the course of individuals' lives and give them more opportunities to live a fuller potential later. So those of us who study development, those are the things that we're really passionate about.
Dr. Suma Jacob with the SPARK study, and that she is Director of Autism Research Program at the University of Minnesota. We'll put some links up on our website, so if you are interested in participating in the study, you can learn more. It's at listen.sdpb.org. Dr. Jacob, welcome back, and thanks for being here again.
Thank you very much.